have to actually introduce anyone this time because it's me. So I'm gonna. I still have the wine app open that I had before. Let me pop that open. And what I want to do on this app is I want to make money, right? So I want to be able to do in-app advertising. And I want to show you how easy it is. So inside the install of the free tools or Visual Studio, you will not find this control yet, this ad control here. So I want to take a quick minute to show you how to get it. It's really easy. But if you don't know the steps, then you have to go search and figure it out. So all you have to do to get the control is download it from the Download Center. It's a Microsoft Advertising SDK for Windows Phone 7. You're going to download this thing right here. And you're going to just double-click on it to install it. Now, if you've used anything before, like the Ajax Toolkit, if anyone's used that before, you remember that it didn't install it in the toolbar right away. You had to go and install it. So in Visual Studio, it's, again, really simple. You would right-click over on the toolbar. You can do Add Tab, which I did, and I called it Advertising. Then I right-clicked and did Choose Items, and I grabbed the DLL where it installed it, and it puts the control right in your toolbox. Okay, really simple. If you get home and you didn't follow those steps completely, just email me. I'll show you how to do it, but it's really simple. And I really just pointed out to make sure that you know that it's not in your default install, so you're not going crazy trying to find it. Once you have that, it's just a regular drag-and-drop control. So I'm going to go ahead and drop this on here and position it. Oh, of course, there's a trial mode to this control, or you can use it for real. So to use this control, you would sign up for the Microsoft Advertising Pub Center. Okay, it's free to sign up. For my app, I went and chose the different types of things that I wanted to advertise for my app. Obviously, my Wino app, I got food and drink all, food and drink wine, and food and drink dining out. You're able to choose up to three per ad. You want to set up an application, which is you're just basically saying what application is this set up for. You can see that here. And it's going to give you an application ID. We're going to use that in a second. And then within that application, I set up ad units. Now, this talk's really not about the click-throughs and all that stuff. That's all up there for those really diving into advertising. I really just want to show you how easy it is to implement in Visual Studio and throw it on there. So after I set this up, which is another 5 minutes to sign on and create that, again, we go ahead and drag it right on here. I'm going to go to the code behind here. And the first thing I want to do, by default, it's set to test. So in my constructor, I'm going to add a piece of code. Which is Microsoft at advertising.mobile.ui ad control test mode equals false. Because I want to actually pull real ads on my application right now. I'm going to set up a credential provider in my XAML. I'll show you that real quickly. I don't know why I broke away there. Let me snap that back in. That's not how I wanted to snap it back in. Let me save that. Perfect. I'm going to click on that control. You can see it here in the XAML. My credential provider is basically allowing me to set up my credential provider to tell it that I have the ability to run ads in this control. I'm going to go to my app page, or app.xaml, which is my global stuff. And I'm going to add some functionality here. Which is my ID. This is my credential ID that you saw that I grabbed from the website that I got from the ad network. And then finally, I'm going to add this to the top of my class. Oh, I know what I have to do. Using. And I'm missing something here, and I don't know what it is. Let's do this. Let's pop that one open. Nope, it's not the one we want. Let me try one more so I can show you. Let's see, wine three maybe. Well, we're collecting the evals. I'll figure out what I did wrong in the code, and I'll show you. But it really is just adding those four pieces of data. And when I actually run it in the emulator, you will see the ad pop up. And when the ad pops up, you'll be able to click on it, get click-throughs and all that stuff. It's really simple. Like I said, I'll figure out what I did wrong while we're collecting evals, and I'll show you that it's working. Let me close it for now. Credential provider. What am I missing? All right, I'll figure it out later. Let's move on. Okay, in this section, we're going to be talking about all the stuff that's on top of what you already know. We're going to talk about what's on top of C#, what's on top of Silverlight, what's on top of the design surface. And this is the stuff that's specific to Windows Phone. And we're going to talk both architecture and the APIs that you're going to be accessing. Now, I'll tell you right now, the APIs that you access are really simple. And we've done that for a reason. I told you at the session number one that one of the things that we're able to do since we own the stacks to all these things is we're able to make it easy for you to access stuff. I already showed you how easy it was to access the keyboard stack and how to utilize that. So we're going to touch on a lot of the other ones. To begin with, though, we're going to talk with application lifecycle. Now, application lifecycle is relatively simple on the phone, but it takes me going through it once for everyone to understand, well, for a lot of people to understand how it reacts differently from a normal application, whether it's a web app or a desktop app. And the reason it's going to act differently is because we discussed in the opening session how we've made a lot of decisions to protect the user experience on the phone. And I've had a lot of questions on this background processing. So one of the things that we made a decision on is background processing is not available to third-party apps. And I'm sure I will get people that disagree with me, but it's actually a good thing, and I will tell you why. So in previous versions of Windows Phone 6.5 and before, people could install apps that are running in the background, have no idea they're running in the background, and kill the battery, make the phone sluggish, and normal people don't know how to kill tasks, right? So for a consumer, it's the phone that they blame and the phone that's trouble. In addition, on the developer side, you can write a 6.5 app and runs great in your test environment, runs great on your phones. You can try it on 20 phones, but you know what? You have no idea how it's going to react on a phone somebody else has if they have all these processes running in the background that they don't know about. So what this gives you as a developer is you know when your app is running, you get the full power of the phone. Okay, so you can test your app and be certain that the way it reacts on your phone is the way it's going to react on other people's phones. So for the consumer, it's a consistent experience. For the developer, you have people happy with your app because it responds the way you developed it. Now, to be clear, there is background processing on the phone. It's just not available to third-party developers. So you'll notice that our music stuff plays in the background, our phone stuff, all the stuff we do runs in the background. It's just not available to third-party developers. So what that brings up is the application lifecycle. And how many of you have heard the term tombstoning? Who wants to tell me what that is? Good, that's why I'm here then, to explain to you what it is. It's rather simple. Now there's a couple terms you want to keep in memory. There's two different types of state that you want to really worry about. I have a bunch of stuff up here, but you have persistent data or persistent state and transient state. Persistent state is stuff you always want there whenever they launch the application that you always want saved. Transient data or transient state, however you want to term it, is stuff that you want in case they go somewhere else and come back to your application. Okay? So I'm going to put up we're all geeks here, so I'm going to put up a flow chart. Well, I guess I'll first talk about these. You saw these earlier inside the app.xaml.cs file. We have the running, the closing, the launching, the closing, the deactivating, and the activating events. Running is just a state. And they seem similar, but they're very much different. When you first open up an application, what event is going to be called? Launching. That's easy, right? When the application closes down, what event's going to be called? Closing. That seems simple, but in a phone, it doesn't work like a desktop. It doesn't even work like a web app. People are going to go from the home screen to your app to the next page of your app to, oh, I got to check on music, to another app, then a fourth app. And I told you the back button works the way you expect a back button to work, meaning that as you go through and go forward in the phone to go to different places, we are remembering where you were. But there's two important parts of that. We're not remembering the data. You need to save that, okay? And when people go away from your application is not running in the background, okay? So when you start an app, it's launching. When an app closes, and we'll talk about when that happens, that's closing. But these in-between things, while it's still on the back stack, we're all developers here, so does everyone know what a LIFO stack is? Last in, first out. That's basically what we're doing. As you go to pages, we're building up the stack. When you start going backwards in the phone, we grab them out, right? So what happens is, as you are navigating this, someone opens your app, first page of app, second page of app, to the phone, to the home page, to another app. As you start coming back, if it's already launched, when it's leaving your app, you're deactivating. Okay? Deactivating event's going to fire. You need to save state. I think it's about 10 seconds you have to save whatever state you have of the form, and you're just saving transient state there. Right? When you're coming back, so they've gone to the phone, and then they've gone to the music, and they start coming back to your app, we remember where you were. So when you come back to your app, what's going to happen? What's that? Activate. So they're very similar in what they do, but remember, we're only basically keeping the shell. This is where they were. The only thing that's different than that is, so when, okay, I got a question. When's the closing going to fire? Exiting the application isn't as simple as it sounds, like in a web app or a desktop app. So exiting the application isn't going away from the application. There's no exit button on the application. There's no close down button on the application, right?
When you power off the phone.
Well, yeah, power off the phone will kill it. So there's two ways to exit or close an application. So again, front page, first page of your app, second page of your app, phone, right? You're going to come back on the stack. You're going to go second page, first page, home. You're off the back stack. It's going to close. You're done. We don't remember forward. We only remember the back. Remember, it's a LIFO stack. So once it's off that stack and you've gone past it in the back stack, it's gone. That event's going to close, okay? And it's very clean. And I'll show you on the phone just so you can actually see this happening. And to me, this is huge because there's been back buttons on phones that I've used for a long time. And I'll hit the back button and I'll be like, wait, where did that go? It doesn't go where it's supposed to go. This goes where it's supposed to go. Now, there's one caveat to that. In the back stack, we're going to leave it there until you go back over it, right, and take it off the stack, unless you relaunch the application. If you relaunch the application, that's also going to take it off the back stack. Okay, so a closing will happen there as well. Does that make sense? What's that? Yes, yes. A close first and then a launch. Right. So there's a couple things. So that's what tombstoning is going past it and then coming back. So that's what the term tombstoning means. Once it's explained, it's pretty simple. But there's a couple things you need to understand. Is that splash screen I showed you. That splash screen is going to happen when you launch. Splash screen is also going to happen when you come back from going away from your application. So when you're designing that splash screen, you can't do like a normal splash screen where you say, these are all the developers that developed this app, see how cool we are, because what's going to happen is you're going to see that at the other end. So it's just kind of a transitional screen. So remember that in your designing, that it's going to be when you launch it and when you come back for your app. You know, it'll be like a resuming screen. If you think of it that way, you'll design it correctly. Does that make sense? Okay. So let's run through it on the phone. Just so you could see this work, and hopefully it. I have a meeting I'm missing, I guess. Okay, so I'm going to start on the home screen. I'm going to go to event board. I'm going to go to, once that loads, I'm going to go to another page on the event board. I'm going to go back home. I will open up Twitter. Let that load. I can go to messages. I'm going to go back home. Where else do we want to go? We want to go to maps. I'll go back home. I want to let that load all the way. And I want to go to people. So now when I do the back stack, it's going to be exactly what you'd expect. It's going to go back home. It's going to come back to the maps. It's going to go to, I can't even remember where it was right now. It's going to go back to Twitter. It's going to go to the first page on Twitter. It's going to go back to the home screen, I believe. Oh, maybe I didn't do home screen in there. It's going to go to the conferences. It's going to go to people. It's going to go to the home screen. So, again, what's that? Well, there's no such concept really in phone for forward. It's not a browser. So there's no forward where you were. And, you know, we're conserving resources. In the phone by just, you know, keeping track of where you were but not all the data. So you never really need to go back that way to the apps you have because you're going to relaunch them. But if you've navigated this way, you want to go, oh, I was just there. I want to go back. So the concept, which I guess could be implemented in the phone, it's not really the paradigm that the phone uses. Does that make sense? Okay, is there any phone out there that navigates forward? Does anyone have a phone that navigates forward? And I'm not talking a browser. Okay, so it's not a paradigm that's on a phone right now, right? I'm not saying it wouldn't be cool, but that's not implemented on any phone. There's probably some technological reasons for it, but the phone paradigm is just kind of a backstack, where was I type of paradigm. You have a phone that has that, right? No, okay. Yeah, it goes down the stack.
But in some cases, when you went back, it didn't go back to home where you launched a new app from.
No, it did. I mean, I could run through it. Let's run through it later. I'll prove it. I got a lot to cover, but it does go back on home. Yeah, it keeps home. It keeps all the pages, even the stuff that's inherent on the phone. It keeps track of where you were there as well, including the home screen. Any other questions on that? You know, that's a great question, and I think it would be rather difficult to do it. You'd have to be, it'd have to be a concentrated effort to always be going forward in your app and never open up the same app again. So I don't know what the limit is. I don't think there's one, but if you think about navigating through your phone and what you're doing, you're going to the People Hub and then you're going back, or you're going here and you're going back. It's constantly going back and pulling stuff off that you reopen. So I don't think there's a limit, but I don't think there's a limit at all. It'd be kind of hard to reach. Okay. Sensors. So as we discussed, there's 5 senses on the phone, including smell, which would make a great fart app, right? Sorry, I always have to do that joke because it always works. We actually have 5 sensors on the phone: light, GPS, proximity, accelerometer, and compass. Kenny already talked about accelerometer, and from listening in the other room, I know there's people in here that know math quite a bit better than I do, so I'm not going to cover that. Accelerometer's actually quite simple to work with. The API is because you're really just grabbing 3 pieces of data, right? The X, Y, and Z, positive or negative. What you do with that is where the math comes in. So pulling it from the phone is easy. It's then determining not only where it's being held, but how fast it's moving, right? And so with the accelerometer, it's just, 2 events that you're capturing, and from those 2 events, you're grabbing those 3 pieces of data, okay? Kenny's sample has a really easy way to see how he's grabbing the data and modifying it. And it can get more and more complex depending on what you're doing, a quick move or a shake that's going to erase, and you can capture those events. So the specifications for the phone, as we talked about in the first session, is it has to have these 5 sensors: GPS, accelerometer, compass, light, and proximity. You only have access as a third-party developer to the first 2. So I think you asked a question, someone over here asked a question earlier about light sensor, if you have access to it. There's no access in version 1 to the light sensor. So I think it was prioritized which sensors on the phone were most important to development. And I'm assuming, unless your whole business model is on light sensors, you would agree that GPS and accelerometer were probably the key ones to get out in version 1. So those are the 2 that we have accessible right now. Everyone knows what the proximity sensor is, right? Proximity sensor, and that's why I asked that, because people don't know. It's when you take it can be used for other things, but when you put your phone to your head, that's how it knows to turn off, because it knows your proximity of where you're at. It actually utilizes the the accelerometer as well internally to determine how you have it tilted and all that, but that's basically what it's for. Location. How many of you have ever done GPS location on desktop stuff? Fun? Yeah? It's fun? Okay, I would slightly disagree with you. The end result's probably fun, but the development's slightly painful. So location on the phone, we're going to talk about both how the phone accesses it, and then I'll show you a quick demo to show you how easy it is to access in your app. So location services are based in the hardware layer. You have the GPS receiver, the Wi-Fi, and the cellular radio, and they talk to the native code layer, which, again, you don't have access to. The native code layer then gives that information to system.device.location. Now, before I go further, you notice that we grouped five sensors together. GPS is not necessarily a sensor, but it's grouped within those. And the reason I bring that up is you'll find all the other sensors, when they come out, in one namespace, in the sensor namespace, and locations, obviously, in this namespace. It's the same namespace you have on Windows 7, system.location, and it uses, I think, many of, if not all, the same methods you work with the sensor and location platform on Windows 7, if any of you have played with that. So within location, you have to deal with certain variables. So on the way here today, I had to pull out of my hotel, and when I pulled out of the garage in the hotel, I had to park my car before I could get going. Who can tell me why I had to do that? You're right. I had to wait for the GPS signal, right? I had to wait for my GPS to find it. Personally, I can't find anywhere when I travel without a GPS. I know it's sad, but I've gotten used to it. I remember, was it Thomas Brothers Guides? I don't know if they've gone out of business, but I remember having to flip through those, and I guess I'm showing my age, but young people in the crowd are going, what is he talking about? What is that guide thing? So GPS has an inherent difficulty. You're trying to get a signal from three satellites. It can sometimes take 5 minutes. You can pull over in a car, and that's not too bad, right? But on your phone, no one's going to wait that long for it on your phone. So what we utilize is assisted GPS. Assisted GPS is there, and I'm not going to spend, you know, the whole hour talking about how the whole system works, but assisted GPS basically means we want to be able to get you pinpointed where you are as fast as we can. And the way you do that is by utilizing not just GPS, but you utilize a cell tower triangulation and Wi-Fi triangulation. And what that means is we're all on the same Wi-Fi network, so when you turn it on, it recognizes this Wi-Fi. But Wi-Fis and cell towers have a radius, right? So if your phone sees a certain Wi-Fi, you could be here, or you could be, you know, way over here, and cell towers are even more, right? So you have the three different parts of location. You have GPS, which is going to pinpoint you within, I guess, meters. You know, I'm not even personally sure how close it goes, but really close, right? You saw earlier when I showed on the phone, it pinpointed the building in the corner of the building I was in, so it's pretty good. You have the Wi-Fi, and then you have the cell tower. So when you take all three of those, you're able to more quickly find where you are on the phone, because no one's going to wait that long. I've kept this slide how it is, although it's changed inside of the environment right now. So you have, as a developer, two ways to access location. It used to be called high and low. Now in the code itself, it's called high and default. So high is, I want to access GPS, I want to know within a couple meters where I'm at. Low is, I want to know what city I'm at, right? So low will not use the battery as much. Low will not use the power as much. So depending on what your application is, most applications will want to just know, what's your proximity? You know, where, you know, I want to know that I'm in Mountain View. I don't necessarily need to know that I'm in Building 1 at Microsoft. So when you write your code, it's going to ask you whether you want, or what the geo position accuracy is, high or default. And quite honestly, I think they renamed it from high and low to high and default because they want developers to utilize the default and not utilize the battery consumption and the power consumption that GPS will look for. Now, one of the things it also does is if you're looking for a GPS fix, can't find it, it's going to degrade to low until it can't, right? Again, to get you that quicker information. The opposite is also true. It's going to try and kick up the GPS if it can't find the low, because the base result is you want your app to be able to find out where you are. Okay. Okay, let's go ahead and show you some code. So let me show the app first. It's a really simple app. It's got one main page. It's going to show the status of gathering, and I'll show you where it's getting the data. It's going to show the status of gathering where I'm at. It's going to have latitude, longitude, horizontal accuracy, and speed. And down here on these buttons, these are going to, and I'll show you where the clicks are. It's going to, the first one I think searches for low, so it's going to set it for low to find out where I'm at. The second one searches for high. The third one turns it off, and the fourth one, I don't remember. But that's the functionality. So I'm going to show you the code. So the first thing you need to do is bring in system.device.location. So you bring in that reference. I showed you how to add a reference earlier. And we add a using statement for that. The thing I'm going to work with is a simple class called GeoCoordinate Watcher. So I'm going to declare a watcher of type GeoCoordinate Watcher. So these are the button clicks. They're all basically doing the same, as you'll see. So this is the low button click. I'm going to set the accuracy text to power optimize. That's nothing code. It's just me giving some information to the phone. And I'm going to call this method that's not part of the class. This is just a method that I called start location service. And you see I'm passing exactly one thing. I'm passing the geoposition accuracy, and I'm passing default, which is low. It's going to go Wi-Fi and cell tower triangulation. High does the same thing, except it passes high. And the stop button looks to see if it's running. If it is, it tries to stop it. And you want to do that. We can talk more about how you should utilize this. There's different ways. And the different ways you do this is really just different ways to write this code. You don't want to have the watcher going all the time because it's going to keep looking for a signal and keep looking for a signal. If you don't want to have to know exactly where they're moving in your app, you want to turn it off. You know, you want to save their power. You want to save their battery. But to show you what you have to do, you can see right here, I'm newing it up. So I just declared it up above. I'm newing it up right here. Watcher is equal to new geocoordinate watcher, and I'm passing the accuracy, depending on which one it came from. And this is absolutely all you have to do. I'm handling two events, status changed and position changed. I'll call watcher.start. Status changed, simple. It's a switch statement. It looks like a lot of code, but everyone in here, I'm sure, has written a switch statement. We're not going to spend a lot of time on that. When this event fires for a different status, if it's disabled, I'm going to go to label and say it's disabled. If it's initializing, whatever, no data, ready, et cetera. So that's simple. You don't even have to implement that. That's just if you want to obviously give information to your user or you want to know it. And the other one is position changed. Position changed, I'm adding to the text block position.location.latitude.toString. When that event fires, it's just going to pass it there for me. So again, us writing these stacks makes it easier for you to grab the lat and long with just a few lines of code. Let me go ahead and run this. It is complaining because I had deployed to my device earlier. So I guess I'll take this time to show you that. So when you have a developer device and it's unlocked, all you need to do to debug on the device itself is to change that little drop-down from emulator to device, and you can deploy and debug on the device itself if you have it plugged in here. But I don't have that set up, so I'm going to change that back to emulator. Run it again. And I'm going to go ahead and click this. It's initializing, power optimized. Data unavailable. Why is that? The emulator does not have location data. Super easy to fix. There's a couple solutions out there. Some are really complex. If you need that complexity, fantastic. These are third-party developers that are doing things like working on a 6.5 HTC where they put a service on there to track latitude and longitude of that extra phone, which then talks to a service to the emulator and gives the data there. If you need that type of testing, fantastic. It's out there. You can implement it. I personally like something that Peter Tor, who works at Microsoft, did way back when we did the Mix, where we launched the tools. It's a helper or a mock for it. Let me go ahead and add a project, and I'll show you what this is. You can download this from his site or from my site. I'm going to add an existing project. Oh, I think I have it here. I think I have it in here. Okay. It's a project called Mix Demo Helpers. So I'm going to go ahead and add that project. And so in my solution, you can see I have the location sample I have. And what this is, if you don't know what a mock is he's taken that class that I just showed you and stubbed it out and mocked it out so that when you call it, it's going to give you pretend data. Okay? So you can spend the time looking at how he's implemented the geo-coordinate watcher and look at the code he's put in there. But then he's created these two files. I created the Los Angeles data one, Las Vegas data one. You can utilize this to, and I'll show you how simple it is, to determine exactly what data, where they're at. So basically, what this piece of code is doing is loading up lats and longs inside of a list and then telling it every 20 seconds or whatever, move to this position in lat long. So you can simulate this. And here's the beautiful part about it, and this is what you have to look out for when you're looking for something to implement this. And I'll show you how you do this in a second, is there's some out there that I really have spent a lot of time to make them cool, like being able to click on a map and the map sends the data to the phone. But when you're looking at these, make sure that the way they've implemented them makes it easy for you to go from emulator to phone in a very simple switch. Some of them have a lot of code in the phone that has nothing to do with how it's going to look when you go to the production. And I'll show you how this does it. So I'm going to go back to the solution. I need to actually add this project as a reference to my location service sample. Shut these down. I'm going to go to my main page. I'm going to comment out using system.device.location. And instead, I'm going to do using mixed demo helpers.location. And I just need to do one more thing. In my constructor, what do we call that? Los Angeles data location data. That's set up. And that's it. So now when I run this, all right. He hasn't stubbed out everything, obviously. Let me see what else it's complaining about. This is definitely demo code, but that's the one I've worked at with more. So he hasn't stubbed out speed or that other one, but but you can finish it and stub it out. He might have a more current one. So that's what those errors were. And now you'll see when I start this, I should be able to get data. So you can see now I get latitude and longitude. So you can plot this on a map, use it for whatever you want to do, and it gives you a very easy way to get fake data in the emulator. So there's a bunch out there. I've used this one for a while. Obviously, I hadn't tried to see if you had the speed stubbed out, but it's really easy to get it to work for you to test your app. You know, that's a request that we hear a lot, and I hope I don't sound like a broken record today, but you know, we needed to get V1 out is my answer, right? Oh, I'm sorry. The question was, why didn't you build this directly into the emulator? You know, we completely changed courses on the phone and brought out a brand new phone, and you know, some things made the cut and some things didn't. Like any phone, like any version, you guys are software developers, you know how that goes, so yeah. In 6.5, and that's the last thing I heard. Right. In 6.5, you can use a fake GPS file. Is that what you said? Right. And it's really the same question he has. It's not that none of that's built. So you have to emulate it yourself. Either you can write up a mock. There's other mocks out there. You can utilize this one. The point here is not whether it is or not. The point is to get your app out if you want to use location data. Two things to remember. One, it's easy. There's stuff out there to use. Two, make sure it's as easy to use as that, a flip and a switch. What this means is I can comment out that thing in the initializing, and I can change the using statement, and it'll run on the phone. Okay, that's what you want to look for. Yeah, one more question. That's a great question. So the question is, if we implement a map application. Using the Bing Maps control, can you get step-by-step driving navigation as part of that control? Did you guys, you had an answer to that? I heard you say that earlier. Okay, so yeah, so it's not built in. You can't access the stuff that you already see in our maps, but you can call services to do it utilizing Bing Maps. There's a lot of different services out there. I believe Bing Maps itself will do that mapping stuff. I haven't played with it enough, but there's a lot. You know, there's other services that will give you that type of stuff. So quite honestly, it's up to you. I think it would be easier to use Bing Maps because it would integrate with the map as opposed to trying to plot it yourself coming from another service, but okay. We can take other questions at the end as well. I want to definitely make sure I have time to show you one more thing because I really want to drive this home. Not launchers and choosers, but push notifications, and I want to show you a sample that you can have and download and implement yourself for push notifications. So launchers and choosers is how you interact with all the other things on the phone. Most other things on the phone, I should say. So this is how you launch the camera. This is how you grab an email address. This is how you grab a phone number to send an SMS. So choosers are the things that allow you to choose things, an email address, an SMS, all this stuff. A launcher launches an application, launches the camera, launches to send email, launches to send SMS. And there's a whole list of them. The important thing to understand, I'll show you how simple the code is. The important thing to remember, which is why I have this after the beginning of the talk, is when you launch one of these things, what's happening? What's that? Your app you're going away from your app. You're navigating away from your app. So you're tombstoning. Now, when you launch these things, it will give you an address that it returns to, just like making an async web call. So when that task is done, it's going to go back to your app. But in that process, you're tombstoning. So remember that when you're developing your app. I'm going to show you one of the apps. It's a sample app you can do, and then I'll show you the code. Yeah, it's an internal build of the phone. It's only internal. It's not available. It just allows us to do this projection. So this is the photo samples application. And all it simply does is show you how to use the launcher to launch the camera. It does a little cropping thing, which I'll show you, but that's a side thing and has nothing to do with launchers and choosers. So I hit the button on the bottom to take a photo. It's going to launch the camera that you guys have all seen before. It's going to take a picture. It's going to ask you if you can accept a retake. Now, this application did not, but through launchers and choosers, you can also say either choose a picture. Oh, did it stop? Yeah. Stop talking about it. Shh. Okay. Let's try this again. So I'm going to take the picture. It says accept the retake. So you can also, it's a variable in there that you can set. You can also choose between grabbing a picture from your storage or taking a picture. This one just goes right to the camera. I'm going to go ahead and do accept. That's going to pop back there, and basically it's setting the image that came back to a image control that I already have on the form to show you what it does. Now, for those of you that are interested in this stuff, this sample which I can give you does cool cropping. This has nothing to do with launchers and choosers. It's just a cool control that allows you to do the cropping. So that's the app. And let me show you the code itself. I hear you whispering which way to go to make sure I go the right way. Launchers and choosers, photo sample. And I will fix that advertising one. I don't know what I missed, but those of you who've been on stage, sometimes you go blind when you're on stage. When you're looking at code, it's one of those symptoms. So here's the app. Let's see, right here that you just saw. And I'm going to show you which code to ignore that has nothing to do with launchers and choosers because there's just some extra code in here. So this is the app you just saw. And all of them, this is the great part, all of the launchers and choosers work this way. Now, some of them have different properties to set, right? But I'm going to create a camera capture task. I'm going to call it CTask. This stuff is just, you can create application bar stuff from code or from XAML. And that's what all of this is. This has nothing to do with the camera capture task stuff. Right down here, I'm going to new it up. So I'm going to set that variable and new it up to new camera capture task. And then right here, I have a ctask.completed. So when this event fires, this is the place where it's going to end, which means that after I take the picture, it's going to jump back to here. And let me find that, which is right here. And that's it. So that's the extent of using the camera. Now, in there, you can see that I'm taking the image it sends back, and I'm manipulating it somewhat, and I'm grabbing it, and I'm loading it to an image. But that's all your code. That's whatever you've done with images before. Once you get the image back, you can do whatever you want with it. You can modify it, color it, you know, do whatever you want. This, I'm simply just adding to an image control. And all the launchers and choosers are like that. Like I said, all the stuff we have access to, We've built APIs around it so that you can concentrate on making your application what you want to make it and not, you know, get buried down in the details. Okay, the last thing, and I can answer questions on that after, but I definitely want to get to this. The last thing I want to talk about is push notifications. Isolated storage, 2 seconds. How many people have ever done any system.io file work? Okay, so I'm not even going to cover this. So you read a file, you write a file, you create a folder, you put the file in the folder, read the end, create, same stuff, okay? Different namespace, that's it. It's easy. In any language, if you've done it before, it's easy. So SD cards are not removable in the phones. Yeah, so as opposed to 6.5, where you can tether it and put it in and, you know, traverse through the file system, you cannot do that, and SD cards are not removable. There'll be different sizes depending on the vendor, and if you saw the announcement, you notice that some phones have more, some have less, but it's to protect the intellectual property of people loading their apps on there with the zap files and all that stuff, so it's part of making sure you can't install an app on a thing and grab it, put it in the thing, and try to dissect it. So. Okay, so push notifications. We are not the only platform that has push notifications, right? But so I'm going to explain push notifications, how ours work, and then the difference between ours and other platforms. And obviously, that's going to go back to LiveTiles. So your application, and again, this is really simple to implement if you have a service. So push notifications are essentially you sending an XML payload to the phone. That's it, okay? But for this to work, the first thing you need to know is which phone you need to send something to, right? So your app, when you load your app, if you're using push notifications, you're gonna write the code. It's 2 lines of code, I think, and again, I hate when people say that, but it's a very minimal amount of code to open a push channel. So you're contacting our service, and you're grabbing back a URI. The URI is scrambled to say, we know exactly which phone this goes to. So it's a unique URI for the phone that someone's using. So everyone that uses your app, right, when they use your app the first time, it's going to call the service. The service is going to say, here's a URI for this exact phone. So when you push something out to them, you know exactly who you're pushing out. So it depends what you do. You might be pushing out to individuals. You might be pushing out to mass people. That's all dependent on your app, right? So you go to the service, grab the URI. Now your app has that URI. You need to tell your service that URI. And this is where the challenge could come in. If you already have a service, it's easy to add to it, right? I talked about at the beginning the car searching service. Say I already had that car searching service, right, that you can go on the web and search. It's all there already. Then it's easy because I'm just adding this on top of that. If you don't have a service already, then you know you have to build a service that implements that. It's nothing really to do with the phone, but you need a service to be able to react to events. So let's say we have the car searching app. I searched for a Corvette 1967 red convertible for $10,000. My service is chugging along. It finally actually finds one. The service fires an event. When the service fires event, I'm going to tell the person that was looking for that. So I'm going to push that URI with the payload out to the push service, and it's going to send it back to my app. It's not pull, it's push. So everything's happening outside the phone until you need to send something. Now, like I said, we're not the only ones that do push, but we do it slightly different. On the bottom, we have toast notifications. As I was showing you the phone, you saw a couple of those when people texted me, but toast notifications means that it'll drop down from the top, and if you click on that, it'll drive to your app. The second way is if you're inside the app, and I believe Falafel, and I said it right this time, software, implemented this in theirs, I believe, correct? Yes, so in-app push notifications. So you have to have the app open, you can push directly to the app. The third one, which is unique, is the live tiles. You can change the live tile when they're not even in your application. And I want to show you a sample app that you can have and play with Because I, quite honestly, to me, this is, as a developer, you know, I guess I'm weird, but this is probably the coolest thing about the phone, is being able to really affect it from outside the phone and drive people into your app. So let me do that. Weather notifications. I'm going to get a couple errors here that I expect because this was originally built with full Visual Studio, and this version does not allow you to have solution folders in it, which is, if you Visual Studio develop, you know what I mean. It's, it doesn't stop you from building an app, but these errors don't mean anything. I'm going to go ahead and run this app, and it's actually two separate projects, and I'll talk about it when it pops up. Keep your eye down here as this pops up. Deploying to emulator. Yes. You're sending, so it's not really, you're sending strings, right? So I don't know off the top of my head. But you're not sending images. Like, to change images in the payload, you're sending a link to where the image is on the web, to where you have it stored. So I'm not quite sure about the size limitation, but it's rather small because you're only pushing small things. But that allows your application to access this. Let me, I don't know, shut this down because I definitely want to. Let me shut all these down. And then we'll wrap up after I show this. But every time when I show this, I always hear after that it made the light bulbs go on, because a lot of people, I can tell you about it and you have ideas. A lot of people, once they see the visual, they're like, ah, okay. I know what I could use that for my app. Yes. Okay, cool. Did you hear that? 1024 bytes? Okay. That built. So again, keep an eye on here, because this is where it's going to be connecting to our service. And we don't have a fake service, so this is connecting to the real service. Deploying application. Deploy succeeded. It's going to directly jump into the app. So it's trying to open a channel. Channel opened successfully and registration succeeded. So it went there. It said, I need to know which phone you have, this emulator specifically. Now I know it. And after it did that, this is the service. So this is a WPF application which you can use to simulate. Quite honestly, you could have implemented as a WPF desktop app, but you wouldn't want to, because you'd be doing this stuff manually. You want to implement this as a service that runs in the cloud for you, right? But this is a great sample because it gives you all the code and all the connection. So the first thing I want to do, let me move these to different sides, is I want to, remember I told you, you don't automatically get the live tile, right? So I'm going to go ahead and pin this to the start. You can see it just has the default one. And I'm going to go ahead and change this to, if you wanted Redmond, well, then it's going to be raining, right? Let's pretend it's sunny there. And, I don't know, 21 degrees. Because if it's not raining, it's got to be cold. So I'm going to go ahead and hit send. And you see the live tile will change. I'll go ahead and send it again. Let's say it's snowing there now. It's a really bad day for them. So you can see you get all the information, whether it's received, all that stuff from this as well, and you can dive into this code. But quite honestly, this is what excites me the most about this application development. I'll show you quickly. You can also send toast messages. And a toast message will, when I send it, it'll jump down from the top here and make a noise. And when I click on that, which is what you want them to do, it'll drive into the app. And then finally, I can write from the app. I'm not going to change the information, but it's going to give me city, the same stuff inside the app. I can change it in there. The other notifications are cool, and they're great. They're useful on the phone. But being able to change the live tile is really cool. So I'll give you a couple of caveats that you have to implement to pass this through Marketplace. So like location, like notifications, push notifications, you have to ask the user if it's okay when they run your app. Let me start this. And you also have to implement a way for them to turn it off, okay, for you to pass through Marketplace. So that's for location, that's for push notifications, that's for anything that's accessing their data, right? It's easy to implement, but you have to do that to pass through certification. So that's the last session of the day. I hope you guys enjoyed that, and thank you very much. So we'll still take, if you have not filled out your forms to win the fabulous prizes, please fill them out now. People will come around to grab those. And while they're doing that, while you're filling them out, we can continue to answer questions. Yeah. Does it have a magnetic sensor? So what is the hardware utilizing for Compass? I don't know, quite honestly. I don't know what type of sensor. I have it written down, I read the spec, and then I forgot it. You know, it's one of those things that just filtered right out, but I can find out for you. Actually, quite honestly, that's going to depend on the device. It's the device manufacturer that will then talk to, right, yeah. Yeah. What is unlocking? So I can actually show you that. So this already comes in your tools. So you'll notice that if you look at Windows Phone, where is it? Oh, yeah, there you go. Under Developer Tools, there's two projects here. First, there's the emulator, and I always like to pin that down here so I can run it if you want. And then there's a Windows Phone Developer Registration. And if you run that, you have to be on the Marketplace. Okay, there it comes. You have to be already signed up on the Marketplace. And once you do, it'll ask you for your Windows Live ID. It'll ask you for your password. You plug in the phone, and it'll unlock the device. And what unlocking the device means is that in Visual Studio, you can deploy to that phone. That's what unlock means. No, you can lock it and unlock it. Are we not collecting these? Okay. Yeah, you can bring them up here. That's okay.
Can you let us know where we can get all the slides and all the sample software that you showed us?
Yeah, so is there a central place for the slides? Central place for the slides?
Are you in Spain?
Yes.
I'm done.
You got it. Oh, yes. So
all the slides and stuff, or where to find the slides, will be on msdn.com, msdnevents.com, WAC resources. It'll be in the thank you email you'll get for attending. Yeah. Is that part of the... Oh, is that different?
This is students.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do any of you have any questions for Falafel Software? Anything like about MVVM or how they implemented their stuff? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that's a good question. So as you're developing, you'll notice when you have the emulator come up and you want to type stuff in the text box, it kind of gets annoying to go ahead and click on the button. So you can swap the SIP by doing Windows pause break, and it'll then allow you to do keyboard. So instead of that coming up, you just do Windows key pause break, and it'll turn it on so you can do a keyboard. Yeah? What? You mean from that WPS application to the emulator? That's the push service. So when the emulator loaded, because that's the OS of the phone, it went out through a push service, said, I know your unique ID for that emulator. And so it sent it to my push service, or I sent it to my WPF application. So when I made those calls, it went to the push service and back to my emulator. No, it's not local. Yeah, it's using the service. Yeah, it's real.